All right, back to Titus. I thought I wasn't gonna have you.
So not listening.
I don't know.
I was fixing the door so it wouldn't lock.
Yeah, I thought I wouldn't have you. I was concerned about that.
Not today. Not so lucky.
Titus 2, and I want to grab for our last class verses 9 and 10, which finish up actually the segment we've been working this quarter. Titus, or Paul writes to Titus and says, urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith, so that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in every respect. So I wanted to use this segment because it uses our formula, right? In fact, it uses it in the positive way. Does anybody's translation read differently right there at the end of verse 10? Because there are some interesting ways that it's translated.
New King James is a little different.
What's it say?
Not pilfering, but showing all good faith, so that in everything they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior.
Okay, that's the phrase I'm thinking about. Adorn the doctrine. Does anyone's translation say something different than that? Thank you.
Mine adds and do credit. Yeah.
Okay, and do credit. Thank you. Anybody else?
In every respect.
Sorry?
In every
respect, yes. You're it's that. Some translations say, and make the teaching of God our Savior attractive, right? So there's the positive side. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about. We're talking about the kind of life that we live in front of other people that will make the gospel attractive, that will potentially open doors. However, do you find that he says that in the topic of these two verses? What are these verses about?
Being a good employee or slave.
Yeah, he's talking about slavery. And he's talking about how slaves ought to behave toward their masters. Does that strike you as odd?
Not for that day and time.
Yeah. You were nodding?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously that's very foreign to where we're at today in our country with the history of our country. And so that is not at all what you would expect. I mean, that's not at all what people today would expect
the Bible to say.
For God's word to say.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. First, he's addressing slavery. Which Jill kind of gave away the prize at the end because Jill said employer, and that's kind of where I'm headed with my brain. So thank you for heading there with me. But he's talking about slavery, which doesn't seem to have much application to us, since not only is that not practiced, but it's vile to us. She's over here, John, right on the end, and she saved you a place. And then secondly, for him to be talking about slavery at all, and not just talking about it, but guiding people in slavery, just kind of freaks us out a little bit. So how are we going to find any way to reach lost people today in a passage that seems largely to be about slavery? I don't want to unpack that completely, but since we're here, it seems like we ought to say something about that. What should we say about that? The Bible talking about slavery, even telling slaves how to behave, telling masters how to behave in other passages. What do you do with that?
Well, there are places in the world that still
that's true.
They have slavery.
Yep, slavery's still around.
His kingdom is not of this world.
Yep.
I mean, but there's the parallel scripture of whatever circumstances you're in, therein be content. So that would be a different circumstance.
So one of the things, thank you for that, that you could certainly say about this is that because God regulates something doesn't mean God approves of it. Do you buy that? You see that? Divorce is a great example of that. Does God want anybody to end up divorced?
No.
But the reality is people do for bad reasons, and so Scripture speaks to divorce and regulates that. And so if you were a slave living in the first century, you couldn't, Paul really couldn't write to a slave and say, hey, just leave that. That's an unholy circumstance. Why couldn't he say that? That would work, right?
No.
Just walk away. Because?
Well, because they would have been killed. That's the ultimate reason, but there's a lot of responsibility that was wrapped up in all this, and you can see that in the text in Philemon. You know, because when you go to that book, you really get a grasp of the relationship between the master and the slave, and how Paul basically interjected himself to resolve a conflict to keep the slave from being harmed, even though that was the right punishment for what he had done.
Right. I would say this, thank you for that, that if you look at the passages where Paul digs into the slave-master relationship, if you're in the Ephesians class, we will talk about that next week, okay? Or this week. What week are we at? This week. I think he says things that undermine the whole system, okay? I don't think the idea of people owning people is okay with God. And if you look at how he regulates that, I think it's more than just adjusting behavior in it. He's undermining the system. I'll talk more about that Wednesday if any of you want to jump in on that class with us. What else do we need to say about this?
The indication is that you work up in this regard. A master works down. A slave works up.
Okay.
And when a slave stands up for Christ, he may not say anything at one point, but some individual is going to listen to him and say, what are you talking about? Tell me about Jesus. And so that individual, we had a fellow, we took a train on the interior of the country, and he stopped at different places and passed out tracts. He was a lowliest of lowly, and yet he impacted more people because of his simple ways. He spoke up. The other people above him listened to him because he was humble.
There are opportunities in that relationship. In fact, I think that's what this text is all about. You do realize that critics of the Bible are all over this. If you went home and searched this on YouTube, you can just find all kinds of people who are willing to jump on there and say the God of the Bible is a moral monster because he endorsed slavery. When you hear someone say that, let me tell you two things. Either one, they don't know anything about slavery, okay? Or two, they're lying about God. One of those two things is true. More likely, the first thing is true. Because when we hear the word slavery, what is the first word that pops into our minds? What do we think about? What do we envision?
Cruelty.
We think of slavery in the United States 200 years ago-ish, right? That's what's true in our mind. So when we read the Bible and we see that word, we think exactly the same thing. What problem do you see with that?
It's not the same.
Yeah. So part of the problem with that is that the same term can be used to describe very, very different things. And I tell you what awakened, one passage in the whole Bible awakened to me this. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 15. I'm not going to unpack it tonight, but I'm giving it to you. You can go back and read around there. In Deuteronomy chapter 15, there's actually a provision in the law of Moses for slaves who had worked their due time and wanted to stay with their master. And the first thing that popped in my head is, why would a slave ever want to stay with a master? If you were free, if you could go, why would you stay? And so the first thing it told me is, whatever that is in Deuteronomy is not what was going on in this country 200 years ago, right? You with me? Something different's happening there. So what I wish you guys would have done when I first pitched that out there is challenge the whole assumptions that are being made about slavery. We'd be using the same term and talk about very, very different things. By the way, just to pitch it out there, why would a slave ever want to stay with a master? Any thoughts about why that's so?
In a good relationship.
Good relationship? Thank you. What?
They were good to them.
They were good to them?
Security.
Back then, they were part of the family in some levels of slavery. They were bond servants. They were they could buy their way out. There were slaves that were perpetually under, almost like a chattel slavery of old U.S. There are all different levels of slavery.
Yeah, but wouldn't you ultimately want to be free? Well, I mean, we think freedom, right? That's what comes to our minds. Really, why? I mean, that is, we will fight and die for freedom. Why wouldn't anybody want that? Everybody want that, rather.
Well, there's also the fact that, you know, there's, I assume, mental stuff has gone on for centuries, and so there's the people that get, they don't know any other way of life besides slavery, you know, besides being in that situation with their master, or, you know, maybe the people that get, not attracted to, but want to be with somebody who kidnaps them because they don't, I don't know the right term, I forgot it, but they don't know how to live without that type of thing. So, yes, most people would want to be free when you think of how slavery was 200 years ago or whatever, but there's also the aspect that people just, it's a scary world out there, especially thousands of years.
Okay, give me a second, I'll come back to you guys. Let me jump on that part about being the end of the world. Again, we see everything through the lens of our experience. And forget, even the world we live in today, people experience a very, very different life than you and I live today, right? Did anybody get up this morning and wonder what you were going to eat? Right? I mean, I have to decide, right? It's not, will there be food? You didn't spend any time today trying to figure out how to get food. There are people all over the world that their whole existence day by day is, how will we eat today? You understand what I'm saying? And back at that time, in biblical times, starving to death was a thing. Like your whole family during a famine could die because there's no food. And so the value being attached with the rich man was, he's got money. He's got money all the time. He's got money to get him through the tough times. They send him down to Egypt to buy some food. That's the reason the Bible, right? To sustain the family. So if you worked for a guy, and some of y'all have already identified this, who treated you like family, like David was saying, who was very kind to you and took care of you, and if the famine came, could provide for you, and he says, I'll just take all of you. You work for me, I'll give you a place to live, I'll feed you. In a world where you could starve to death, your kids could starve to death, that's not a bad deal, right? So we got to remember that sometimes the way we're processing it isn't the way they did. Sometimes this was how they settled crimes. In fact, I'm not sure their system wasn't better. You've committed a crime against somebody, you go and work for the guy and pay it off. How you like that? You're going to be a slave for 5 years for what you did. But work at his house, take care of the problem. Wouldn't need prisons, people learn a trade. I don't know, that almost sounds like a better deal. In the cases of extreme poverty, it was a way of handling debt. Why? Because you couldn't file bankruptcy and just have the debt go away. Okay, you come, bring your family, you come work, you're going to work here for the next 7 years, and you're going to pay off your debt. I don't know, is that a horrible system? I'm not sure about that, especially in the world in which they lived in. So that's why I'm saying, when people say to you, the mention of slavery in the Bible makes God a moral monster. It's just not true. People just don't understand the nature of that relationship and in that world, the necessity of that relationship. Okay? All right. You want it in, and then you want it in. I think I saw his hand first, and he's been kind of mad at me anyway, so I need to get to him.
the one exception I'd take to that, though, is you're thinking in terms of Jewish law and Jewish realm.
That's in the Bible.
They were, I understand, but they were under Roman. They were under Rome. I mean, and Rome was known for slavery.
Oh, yes.
And Rome was known for not the benevolent slavery. And you could potentially have Christians in the same situation, but under Roman law, not under Jewish law. So,
In Roman society, just to push back a little bit on that, thank you for that, by the way, it wasn't like slaves were just forced labor. People from all stratas of life in terms of occupation, doctors, could be slaves and so on and so forth. And how you were treated would largely depend on the masters. I don't know anything about Roman law that governed that. But I think it was somewhat, David, you brought up indentured servitude that we had in this country early in its history. Some of the Roman stuff was like that. Like, you'd be able to buy your way out of it like you could in the Old Testament.
Well, that's where the gladiators came from.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Certainly there was some bad stuff. I'm not disagreeing with that. And I'll give you the last word on that.
No, I'm just going to say what you just got through saying. You asked the question.
Well, good. I'm glad I got ahead.
Yeah, you asked a question about Deuteronomy, and I said that, to me, it's very simple. It's that they can provide for their family better. Right. And we do the same thing today. Like, I choose to be yoked under my company's rules and regulations because I don't think I have the mind to go start my own business, to be free and do my own thing. So I choose. Now, I understand there's some slight differences, but to me, that's what it was. It was just they felt like they could maybe provide for their loved ones better.
What would you be willing to do to make sure your kids could eat?
Right.
Anything. What would you be willing to do?
Anything.
Make sure your kids could eat. See? So just know, I want you to remember that, because you're going to hear this all the time. God is a moral monster because he endorses slavery in the Bible. Anytime somebody says that, either they don't know about slavery in the Bible, or they're being dishonest. They're lying about God. Okay? Because God's provisions do exactly the opposite of what they're alleging. So let's come back to Titus. We got over that hump, that obstacle. I felt like we needed to do that. What relevance, then, can there be? If this is talking about the slave relationship, I'm setting you up, Jill. This is for your comment a minute ago. If this was speaking to a relationship that doesn't exist in our country today, we don't have masters and slaves, what possible relevance could it have to us? I'm going to let you back in, Jill. Go ahead.
Workplace.
What's that?
Your workplace.
And so tell me what you see there. Talk a little about that.
I didn't choose when to go to work. I didn't choose what jobs I got while I was at work. Generally speaking, I mean, I did what I was told to do, and I didn't guff about it. And sometimes I wanted to. I mean, you know, but you do what you're told. Like Greg was saying, I mean, that's how you provide for yourself and your family, and you're dependent on that work.
So there is this fundamental that we talked about. Did we talk about this last class? I know we talked about it with reference to the family thing, the leadership submission thing, right? And how that's a play throughout society and the workplace. I'm not doing anything to the slides, okay? I don't know what that is. Probably watch this, probably your husband. Oh, it's out? Wow, yeah, there's.
I don't know.
There you go. Fix that. Fix that. Well, what problem with that? Well, no, they'll probably turn it back on. They can probably do that.
Probably something with the stream.
What's that?
Probably something with the stream and the slash.
I don't think I'm streaming.
Oh, that's right. You're not streaming.
I don't think so. That's right. So the relationship that's at work with the government and the citizens and the husband and the wife and the elder and the church, the slave and the master and the boss and the employee, you see it? I do think, while it is not, you said this, it's different, but the fundamental relationship, isn't it? It's a relationship where there's headship and authority, and I'm, in my job, someone who submits. And so I do think that in this last class, it's worth considering what he's saying here about my behavior on the job, at least could be applied to that, and how that impacts my ability to help others find Jesus. So I want you to think about the connection between our job and lost people. Does our job provide an opportunity to influence lost people? Does it?
Every single day?
Ask a question. How many hours do you work? A lot doesn't help me, Randy, but I understand the sentiment. And we don't want to hear from you. Retired people, they always have to rub it in your face, right?
Well, I don't think it matters whether you work or you are retired or whatever, wherever you go. I mean, in the grocery store, you have to treat everyone with respect because you never know when you're going to have that opportunity to be that light.
100%. 100% agree with that, Bessie. Absolutely. I'm just thinking narrowly about in that work setting, about that opportunity. So how many hours do you work?
50 hours.
Give me a day. How many hours do you work a day?
8 to 10.
Is 8 to 10 fair? And I'm not counting the commute. Though there's a lot of ungodliness that goes on the commute, right? 8 to 10 hours a day, right? And how much do you sleep?
6 to 8?
Not as much as I would like. What's left? What's that?
You can't see the board.
Because of this?
Yes.
That's not my program here, ladies. Much is left?
6 to 8.
Yeah, 6-ish, something like that. You see there?
The job sucks up a lot of your time.
What's that?
The job sucks up a lot of your time.
You may spend more time in your day in this setting than anywhere else. You ever thought about that?
Every day.
I think about that. Sometimes I spend more time with Jeff than Heidi. Sometimes it really is, right? Sometimes I need to come home and talk about my coworker with my wife, right? Now, let me ask you a second question.
You are straight, by the way.
I am straight. Please time code that for Jeff's benefit. How many lost people do you work with? Now, that's not true of me. You know, I work with zero lost people in the office during the day. But you guys are surrounded, dozens. And let me ask this question to you. Do any of those people in the dozens or hundreds or how many, are any of them, are you particularly close to them? Yes? Yeah? As in, like, work requires you to interact. Like, maybe somebody have a secretary, right? One of the churches I worked with had a secretary. Name was Nikki. She likes those little triangular things from Starbucks. Because on her birthday, I would bring her scones. Yeah. Little petite vanilla scones, right? How do I know this about Nikki? Because she and I work together every day. I know her. She was a friend. You have people like that that you work with? Do you know very, very well? People that you know more about than just the work stuff. Like, do you know the spouse's name of anybody you work with? Sorry?
And the kids.
How many kids? Any of them in trouble? Mm-hmm. No. So they're more than just coworkers, right? Some people work with were like, it's like a friendship, right? What do you think about all of it? Because as we work in close proximity and get to know each other well and sort of do life together, in all honesty, we may do more life with this person than we do with our spouse and our children because of yes, right? So they begin to know who we really are. We all wear the facade, right? You know what I mean when I say that? What do I mean when I say that? We wear the facade.
We want them to see.
Hi, how are you?
Water.
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine. See
you. There is a person that I want y'all to see when I come to church. Right? Especially as the preacher. There is a person that I want y'all to see. And my wife really has to cover her mouth and not laugh sometimes because she knows the truth. And I am not the person behind the facade because she's ridden with me on the car, Louetta. She knows. She's really young, right? And so when you get close to your coworkers, they see through the little cracks in the facade, right? The weak moments. The moment where the burden is really heavy and your filter's running a little thin and some stuff gets out about who you really are. And they see that. So let me ask you, do you ever get mad when you're on the job?
Yes.
Do you ever need to go back and rewrite some of the story when you got mad on the job? Yeah, you with me on that? Driving home thinking, man, did I say that? That come out. Ever had an ethical challenge on the job?
Oh, yeah.
That you want to share? No, I'm just kidding. Right? Ever had to deal with someone flirting with you on the job? All I'm saying is after family, in this setting, where we're spending most of our typical days around these people who are getting to know us well, they're really getting to know us. So, let me ask you, do you see opportunity in that?
Talking about without mad or anything, you don't say anything, you just turn and walk away.
Yeah.
Then you go back later and discuss it.
Yeah.
Lose your temper.
I wish I was good at that. What's the opportunity there? Thank you for that. What's the opportunity? Yeah.
Well, I have, not too long ago, I was very frustrated at work, and I was constantly talking just the negativity with some women, and I think, like, afterwards, I felt like I had to go back to apologize to them because I felt like it was changing the morale and just that negativity, and I think that opportunity will allow them to see, like, okay, maybe she's different, she's not the same, because I'm a Christian doesn't mean I don't get frustrated, but I think it really, like, helped, like, me taking ownership for the way I acted and saying that I know that was not okay.
Ooh, hardest thing to do, right? Maybe? Hardest thing to do? To go to unbelieving coworkers and say, you know, yesterday, not a good day, and I feel terrible how I spoke to y'all. That just was not right. Not how Jesus will only behave. I'm sorry for that. That's actually turning a negative into a positive, right? I do think there's this glorious moment to, if Matthew 5, 16, to shine as lights as we're doing this, right? Because these people are living in darkness. And we're not just passing each other in the hall. We're sitting across the desk from each other or working this line together on the good days and the bad days. And they get to see me as I really am. And there's an opportunity there to help them see Christ living in me. Right? So I've seen some examples of that in my life. Obviously, I am the guy in the room that can't relate to this. This is why I'm bringing this to you and let you talk. Because while I need to shine a light in the office, you know, but we're all trying to do that here, okay? I'm uniquely blessed in that. I do see some biblical examples of that. I thought, for example, about Joseph, Genesis 39. You want to look there real quick? Of somebody who was shining as a light on his job. If ever there was someone who had a right to be kind of bummed about their circumstances, would it be this guy? Yeah, he didn't ask to be hired. He was sold by mean brothers into slavery. And if ever there was a time to kind of be down about your job, this was it. Here's the interesting thing about Joseph. Look at verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight because he was in his sight and became, rather, his personal servant. And he made him overseer over all that was in his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. Question. Verse 3. How did Potiphar know that Joseph was successful because of the Lord?
Joseph told him.
There's no record of a conversation about that. How do we know that's true? By the way, I agree with that. How do we know that's true?
Because Potiphar didn't believe in his God. He believed in all the Egyptian gods, and his God was different.
Yeah, the fact that Potiphar knows Joseph is successful because of the Lord is evidence that someone had made the connection in his mind and helped him see that. Do you see that? So clearly, somewhere along the line, Joseph has talked to Potiphar about the Lord. By the way, why do you think, I'm coming to you, I promise, why do you think Potiphar is interested in why Joseph is successful? What brought that conversation on?
So he'd be more successful.
He's making him more successful? What kind of worker do you think he was?
Trustworthy, obviously.
Obviously. Hard work. There's something about the way he works. Think about that. Guys, we're filling in the gaps in the story, okay? I understand that. But think about that. Why did Joseph get Potiphar's attention in the first place? It wasn't because of the Lord.
It was success.
He was working. He was a good worker in his house. And he starts to get promoted, which ultimately brings him close enough to begin talking to Potiphar. And who does he talk to Potiphar about? You think if he was a grouchy, lazy slave, that Potiphar would have even known his name? You see how that works? So he's doing the right things. He's being who he ought to be on the job. And he's getting promoted, which brings him closer and closer and closer to this guy God intends for him to be. See how that works? I'm sorry, Randy. You were very patient. Thank you.
No, I was going to comment on that word successful in that verse, because Potiphar came to the conclusion that Joseph was successful. And the question you have to ask is, how'd that happen? Well, if Potiphar is a good businessman, okay, he's watching out for his resources and his money and his things. And if he sees this guy out there working, and every time he comes and shows up to work, things get better and things increase and he's making more stuff. He's got more cows, more sheep, more whatever it is. It doesn't take long before Potiphar's going, I like this guy, you know?
Exactly.
And then the next question is, why is he like this?
Yeah.
Which then opens up the door that you're getting.
Yeah. In fact, I will tell you that when the whole accusation comes up from Potiphar's wife and he gets mad about that and throws Joseph in jail, I don't think his anger's at Joseph. This is my theory on that. I think he knows his wife. And I think what he's about to do is lose his number one guy. He knows it, and that's why he's angry. There's more to that story I'm not going to get into tonight. There's a reason he ended up where he does. Yes?
He may have seen him praying.
He could have seen him praying. Yeah.
Daniel prayed. Anyone in the Bible who was successful prayed about their circumstances before something came about.
Yeah.
So he probably was witnessed him praying.
Yeah. You remember when he was in the lion's den? Mm-hmm. And the king comes the next morning? Remember what he says? Has your God delivered you? Why would he ask that question? Even the king is anticipating what? That whoever this God is that Daniel serves is at least possible that he is delivered from a lion's mouth. There's a conversation that's been going on there too, right?
Yes, sir. I was going to say he's probably obviously seen him interact with the other people of his house. But to put him in charge of everything, you would have to, the trustworthy part is being knowing that he is going to deal rightly with the other employees. So he would have had to have witnessed Joseph's interaction with other workers.
I think so. Tell me to flip this over. What's the other dreadful possibility? The negative possibility. One possibility is I get lied on my job. What's the other possibility?
I get fired.
have a reputation.
Yeah.
That
you can still be successful and still not have a life. You can let your success be driven by doing bad things, ethical issues, or being the bad guy. That can still grow you in corporate America. It just won't be a light.
But you won't be a light. That's exactly right. And so the other possibility is that my conduct and my character on the job contradicts who I say that I am. So surely you've had the experience at some point with someone who, on the outside, the facade said, I'm a very religious person. They talk Bible, they talk church, right? All this kind of stuff. And then there was the moment where they lost it at work. Or there was a moment where there was an ethical challenge and suddenly the ethics are gone. Or suddenly in their anger, a whole bunch of cuff stuff comes out and you're thinking, right? The conduct did not line up with the claim, right, to be a follower of Jesus. And that registers in your mind, doesn't it? Way more than when someone doesn't claim to be a Christian. Because when they're a Christian, we expect them to behave that way. It's when they behave like the world does. When someone claims to have a connection with Jesus, and there's conduct that is in conflict with it, well, then the claim just becomes a joke. Do you see that? So that's what I'm trying to get us to think about. What am I on the job? Because we know it's true. You come to church and put on the facade that I need to wear on Sunday when I'm with other Christians. But what happens when I'm not with anybody who is a Christian? And I spend a lot of time in that city. What do they see? Right? All right. Yes, ma'am.
And that can lose souls. So when you're showing your light, shedding your light, you there's a possibility you can gain souls, but then when you're acting the complete opposite, you can completely turn somebody off from ever wanting to know who Jesus is.
Yeah, what's the story of the religious world, or rather on the unbelieving world about Christians?
Hypocrites.
They're hypocrites.
And
what do? They say, who knew David was that way? Mm-hmm. He's a Christian. They just put on that show. It's not who they really are on the inside. Like, someone, what's you got, Rita? Go ahead.
I was just going to say also, it's important to be principled. And what I mean by that is you don't have to allow somebody to run over you to claim that you're a Christian. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means you stand up and say, no, you're not going to do that.
Okay? Because that's what's right.
Because that's the right thing to do. And you will get a lot of flack for standing up and saying, no, I'm not going to do that, but it's still the right thing to do. So we have to be careful with the kinds of answers we give in the workplace, because sometimes yes doesn't always mean you're a Christian. Sometimes no means you're a Christian.
Absolutely. Definitely. So go back to our text. Go back to Titus. And my next question is, so how does he tell slaves to behave? And is there anything we can draw from that? Any kind of work applications to draw from that?
That word submissive is always very problematic. Especially in the workforce.
First thing he says is, be subject to your own masters. Which in the work setting, how would we say that?
Respect your boss.
Sorry?
Respect your boss.
Which means?
What do they say?
You got to do what they say, right? Does that mean you can't disagree?
Nope.
It depends on the boss, right? But shouldn't mean that. It's good boss, he wants to listen to different ideas.
I think that also means if you do disagree, be respectful about it. Don't just be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Show restraint and be respectful to them and present your ideas to them and let it be heard, but don't do it in a way that's disrespectful.
Thank you for that. Yes, ma'am.
It's for me, because I work in, you know, corporate America and bosses change all the time. It's bigger. It's making sure you're following company policies and you're not doing anything that's against what the rules say.
You follow the rules.
You're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, there is an expectation as all professionals that we can have a diversity of thought. So I can disagree with my boss and we can have a conversation about this is not the right way, or I'm the expert here, so no, I'm not going to do it this way, but I'm going to tell you why. And that's expected for us to have that conversation. It's not a, you know, whip and chain kind of situation. But there are policies that I cannot break, period. And that's,
and how often do you have to violate those to be viewed as inconsistent?
Once.
Yeah, that's it.
I have very rarely seen people get fired, but the times I have, it's been because someone did something with their Amex card or stole something. It is always some policy. It's not because I disagreed with
right.
my boss or
correct.
I made a simple mistake. It's because I broke a rule.
Thank you for that. What else do you see here? Look back at the text. Submit to them. Sorry?
Not argumentative.
Okay, so.
That's what I struggle with.
Let me give you a challenge. Square that with what she just said. I mean, not argumentative.
I mean, abiding by, I mean, with hers, it's, I mean, she doesn't have to be argumentative. She's following policies that have been put in front of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I don't like what you're doing. And I would do it this way, like, there's a lot more room for interpretation, right? So there's a lot more opportunity for arguing or being argumentative.
So, to some degree, doesn't that require you figuring out your boss?
For sure.
Because he may want you.
Or you may also be the boss, so you may also need to understand the flip side of that.
Ephesians 5, yeah, we're going to talk about that in one second. Yeah. But some of it may involve you getting to your boss. Your boss may want to hear from you when you have a different view of it. And maybe a boss that doesn't want to hear from you when you have a different view of it. And you gotta know how that is. Listen, I don't know. John, should we think of our relationship as boss, employee? I don't know. There's some of that at work there. And I know that the elders and I talk. And sometimes disagree. Sometimes I disagree with the elders. Sometimes they disagree with me. We have those conversations. They're cordial and respectful. And at the end of the day, sometimes the elders say, thank you for that, and here's what we're going to do.
Right. Difference between argumentative and disagreements, right? That's very different.
Can I add to that disrespectful? Who used that word a minute ago?
Yeah.
Somebody said that. What I say about the guy that leads me after the discussion that doesn't go my way, right, is kind of important. Do you get into this in work settings sometimes where people just kind of trash the boss?
Yes.
Sometimes, rightly so.
Let me push back a little bit. Is it ever right to trash the boss with the other employees behind his back?
No.
Why?
Disrespectful.
It's disrespectful. And look, what's he obligating me here as an employee? You see it?
Not engage in it.
Yeah. For these disciples, this is a non-negotiable.
It's
how you got
to
be when you're on the
job.
What's that?
It's going to get back to him. Somebody's going to something.
Well, I mean, that is an excellent point. Sometimes we're being stupid in what we're doing. I agree with that. And we ought to think about that. What else is he saying here? You know, is that the second one on the list? You think about the same one I was, where he said, do your best to please him, to make your boss happy? To me, that kind of has to do with the spirit with which I handle the instructions and the responsibilities. This is what he wants from me, and I want to make him happy with me. I want to do what he, or to do what it is he wants me to do. What else do you see?
Self-control.
Self-control? Where are you seeing that? 12? Okay, so you're jumping on ahead. So all the need for all of us to have self-control. Thank you for that. What about 10? What do you see in 10?
I see my dad. I remember so mad one time because he, in his briefcase, I was little, he brought home a Texaco pencil. Said it was green. And it said Texaco on it. And
was
it
was, he stealing?
And it was a 2.5.
Was he stealing?
It wrote so pretty. I really liked it. And he took it away from me because it didn't belong to us. It
really?
Had to go back to the office. Oh. Wow. I'm like, it's a pencil, Dad. But I still remember it, you know, 57 years later.
He says don't steal. Is that a thing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Can I just give you, tell you a really quick story about that?
I've got 1 minute.
It'll be quick. I'm working with our cafeteria downstairs to help them do some things. And we were talking about theft. And they told me, they said, you would not believe how many people, HP employees, are stealing from the cafeteria on a daily basis. They said, we stand there and watch them put things in their pocket and walk out. And that just tells, I was in disbelief when I heard that.
What are they putting in their pocket?
Candy bars, cookies, chips, you know, anything that they can get into a bag or a pocket or anything else, they'll do it.
That's
nice. He adds a verse 10 to be trustworthy. Let me ask you, if you follow what's described, can I get y'all back? If you follow what's described in these two verses, do you think anyone at work will even notice?
Some will.
Yes, over time.
Maybe
not the first time.
Yeah, I wonder if this is another one of those soil preparing characteristics that over time people will notice. She absolutely has integrity all the time. She is uncovered. Won't hedge the slightest bit on an expense report, right? Honest. All the time. I don't know that that will always be positive. Some people will see that and they'll say, let me see if I can catch it, right? Let me see if I can find that out. I know my dad was always a very, very hard worker when he was working. And some of his fellow employees actually resented that.
It made them look bad.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But then you get him on your team.
Ride his coattails.
I think that character is what you are all the time, yeah, right? And who we say we are in Christ ought to be lived out on the job. The situation where we're working constantly. And I got to tell you guys, I know a whole list of people personally through the years who began their journey to Christ looking at a coworker and then talking. Max Dawson, who preaches over in Beaumont, some of y'all know who that is. Max started out as a foul-mouthed line worker in the auto plant who noticed a Christian and they started talking. And I don't even know how many hundreds of people he's led to Christ. Make a difference on the job. It may be one of the most powerful opportunities for our lives to shine. Thank you, guys. I've enjoyed the class. Appreciate your help tonight.